Hey, welcome to the podcast. On this episode, I am joined by Mike from Asgard 503. Mike is a purple belt under the 10th Planet system. He trains out in Portland, Oregon. And we actually got in contact with each other as he kind of liked some of my posts on Instagram. And I was curious about his company, Asgard 503, kind of what motivated him to get started as far as his purpose of the company. Also, I want to discuss Mike's growth in jiu-jitsu, kind of how he has developed under the 10th Planet system, because it's a little different from how I started training, because I train a lot in the gi, and 10th Planet's primarily no gi. So I wanted to kind of pick his brain about that and talk about his motivation for training and his company. And he's a guy that truly loves jiu-jitsu, wants to see it grow, wants to support the jiu-jitsu community, wants to help up-and-coming fighters and submission grapplers. And I thought it was really awesome what he planned and what he wanted to do, and his whole ideas behind his company and his jiu-jitsu journey. So I think it was really great to talk to him, and I hope you guys enjoy the podcast. Mike's a super awesome guy. It was great.
Mike, how do you say
your last name?
Shahan.
Holy shit, I would have never thought that was
Yeah, it's Polish, what do you expect?
You're Polish, I'm Russian.
Yeah. Well, the name's Polish, but
I'm actually Russian, though.
Yeah, I'm a full-on mutt. I Irish, Italian, German, Polish. My mom was actually born in Italy, came over on a boat.
Your mom?
Yeah.
That's sweet, dude.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, where'd you grow up at?
So, I born and raised in Oregon. I grew up in a small town called Lebanon, which is about an hour and a half southeast of Portland. And small town, like 15,000 people. And now it has maybe 17.
Oh.
So,
what'd you do growing up?
I did sports. I did everything. Like, I was super, I'm the youngest of four. So, all my older siblings did sports, played soccer since I was able to kick a ball. My older brother and, my two older brothers taught me how to kick a ball around, and, I got beat up by them a lot, and it
always
fun.
That's always fun.
But, yeah, I did sports. I did Boy Scouts. I was in youth group. I always busy. Like, I very vividly remember my mom picking me up from one event with my clothes in the car to change in the car while I went to the next one. So it was always go, go, go. So
did you go to college anywhere?
So I did a community college. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I still kind of don't. I did community college at a local community college in Albany. I originally went to school for auto body tech. I worked in a body shop, and I took some machine shop classes and some welding classes. Mm-hmm. And that's actually currently what I do now. I weld for a aerospace company.
That's cool.
Yeah. So
you work crazy hours doing that?
Yeah. I actually work the graveyard shift. So
sounds fun.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. So
how does that go with training, like jiu-jitsu? How does that coincide?
So it gets really interesting. I work 10:30 p.m. to 6 a.m. So I go to bed at 6 in the morning, wake up at like 1:30 or 2:30, 3 o'clock, get some food in me real quick, and a couple of days a week, I do strength and conditioning. I actually do CrossFit at a really cool gym here in Portland called CrossFit Magnus. And then I'll go to like an intermediate class on Tuesdays, and Thursdays I usually take off. And then, the rest of my week, I teach class. I help teach our fundamentals program, and then I also train after that. So I try and get as much training. I train on we have a Sunday class that I hit up. It's actually what I did this last Sunday. I woke up at like 11 because I work Saturday night. I work Saturday night through Thursday night. And I woke up at 11, put on my gym gear, went to the gym, went to class for like an hour and a half, came back home, went back to sleep for like three more hours.
Sounds fun.
So yeah, it's a little bit hectic, but you get the training in, you get in what's important to you, I guess, right?
Yeah. So like and I'm not a, 10th planet guy. So what does a 10th planet fundamentals class look like? What's the difference?
So our fundamentals classes are, we're teaching more of the basic positions. We're teaching our Portland program, how we work in, there's six to eight cycles of 2 week cycles. And so everything, all of our curriculum is broken down into that. So for 2 weeks, we work on the same position and then we build off of that position.
Gotcha.
So, we just got done with like a head and arm cycle. And, so we would start with like the basic, like head and arm position. And, so like with, our fundamentals program, we work on like shots and sprawls. And okay. So the person shooting, realizing that you're basically giving up a head and arm, and the person sprawling, realizing that you're basically given a head and arm. Okay. And then we'll build off of that, how the person on bottom works out of that head and arm, like the few couple of escapes, we'll drill those. And then the person on top will teach them about like we have our arm and guillotines, we have our regular guillotines, yeah. We have our 10 finger grip and stuff like that. So as it progresses, we start off with those things and we actually work those into our warm-ups as well. It's very similar like when we had our when we worked on our leg lock, our ashi, our basic leg section, we would work on a lot more butt scoots forward, butt scoots back, basically learning how to get under somebody a little bit quicker. And so that's more of the basic fundamentals, is like we teach the very basic positions and then we'll build off of that. And then it's really cool is like, even if the person comes to fundamentals and then rolls into advanced, the advanced is just more in depth on those positions and a little bit fancier stuff, a little bit more complicated stuff. Like we would say, if we were in our leg lock module, we would teach straight ankle, but then in our advanced class, we'll go into topside heel hooks, topside ashi, or double outside ashi, topside, bottom side, and we'll work more of our flows in our advanced classes, giving you, instead of just one position that we're working for, the four different positions we can rotate through. So
okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, it's a little different than, like, I guess traditional, regular jiu-jitsu, not 10th planet stuff, like, it's kind of weird. You realize the more you get into jiu-jitsu, is like, different camps of jiu-jitsu, obviously like 10th planet or leg lock guys or, traditional, gi guys and stuff like that. And I don't know, man, it's weird. Like, I guess like 10th planet is just, I didn't realize. I was like, oh yeah, I've always like been interested in different, just different positions. I'm always open to any kind of jiu-jitsu that's effective, like I've never.
Yeah.
I've never been like, oh, well, that's rubber guard, that's weird, or whatever, we don't play that in our gym. I mean, we've got a couple guys, not a lot, but a couple guys will play that every now and again. It's super different, and it's like, I'm not used to it. I mean, I play certain stuff that I play is probably like lockdown. I play lockdown a lot, and then for off there, I'll play some stuff. I'll play a little rubber guard, but it can be, for sure, it can be useful. I mean, definitely getting your hip mobility where it needs to be at is super crucial. Do y'all do anything as far as like specific stretching sequences to get into, rubber guard or any kind of other positions?
So it's really funny. A lot of people think that a lot of the more interesting positions like rubber guard has a lot to do with mobility and flexibility and stuff like that. But we actually and that's what I thought in the beginning too, because I originally, when I first started training, I trained in a small gym that we didn't even have any black belts in our gym. I was being trained by a couple of father and son blue belt, and then we would have a black belt come up once a week, Gerald Streben out of Eugene.
Yeah,
and he would come up once a week, but that was when I first started. For like the first year I was doing jiu-jitsu, he hadn't he was busy off doing other things, so he didn't come up. And so I didn't even get to meet him until like a year into doing jiu-jitsu. But so I wanted to learn more about like the 10th planet system, because we work a lot of like the very basic stuff, like mount, side control, very basic stuff. Mm-hmm. And I wanted more. That's what I saw about the 10th planet system. But getting back to like hip mobility and stuff like that, I learned rubber guard watching YouTube.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of people do, if they don't necessarily have like a 10th planet instructor that can teach them that. And so what I learned once I learned proper rubber guard is, it's not so much about flexibility, it's more about position, being able to move your hip off to the side and really cut those angles. It's very similar to like cutting an angle for like an arm bar and stuff like that. Like, people think, oh, it's all strength, the strength of the legs. Well, if you cut the angle, you're not having to use so much strength, you're not going to burn yourself out as bad. But even with that, yeah. And it's really interesting. You see these people come in and they're very tight, they don't have the flexibility and the mobility. Mm-hmm. But just like anything, just being in those positions and just working the positions, everybody starts to loosen up more. And that's one of my favorite things about seeing the fundamentals classes, is seeing 6 months in somebody's progression, is 6 months being able to people start doing a lot of that stuff on their own. You see people stretching out more and then picking each other's brain of, well, what does this work? How do you stretch that out? What's the best thing to do with that? Yeah. And we're actually very lucky here in Portland. We have a great strength and conditioning program headed by one of our instructors, and he has been doing strength and conditioning for a very long time. And he has been able to put together a program to actually work with our curriculum. And so he's definitely very much a go-to for people, for like when people have questions of like, well, my shoulder's tight, what do I do for that? And he would give them a myriad of things to do for opening up your shoulders, stretching your shoulders on your own and stuff like that. So
what's his background?
So he comes from a weightlifting and like a barbell weightlifting background, and CrossFit and powerlifting and stuff like that. So, and he's been training for quite a few years doing that stuff. And he's put together our strength and conditioning program. And I can even see like his development. Like, so we just recently had Eddie Bravo here in Portland for a seminar. And Eddie Bravo was really preaching the clinch game. Really, really, a lot of the stuff that he's working with is like, and he kept reiterating, is like, you need to be doing strength and conditioning. If you're not doing strength and conditioning and you're just doing jiu-jitsu, you're leaving stuff on the table.
Right.
And it's really interesting, because I see more and more, I'm sure you see it too on social media, you see a lot of jiu-jitsu players posting about their strength and conditioning now. Like, I see like guys like Marvin Castile posting, doing a strength and conditioning. You see Tom DeBlas posting, doing his strength and conditioning. You see guys like Gordon Ryan doing weightlifting and powerlifting, and all these guys are doing that to help their jiu-jitsu.
Right.
So
the only guy that's the exception to the rule is Marcelo Garcia.
Yeah.
He's
and freaking nature.
He's like, what do you do? You know, I had Bernardo Faria, you know, on the podcast a while back, and 'cause he did a seminar at our gym. He was awesome. Mm-hmm. And, it was crazy. He's like, well, I was asking, like, what does Marcelo do? He's like, he just trains jiu-jitsu twice a day, every day. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what? I mean, you know, no maintenance, no nothing. And I think it's crazy. Like, is there any certain injuries that you see, like, with people playing 10th Planet type, like, those type of positions? Is there anything you're seeing, like, knee injuries, like a high prevalence of certain type of things happening?
So, yeah, actually, I kind of messed up my knee a little bit doing rubber guard, because there's one thing that we preach a lot is hugging the knee, that over knee that goes the leg that's gone over. I was never – so I – like I said, I learned on YouTube, and so I was always just holding in my getting my good frame, but I wasn't hugging the knee. And that puts so much pressure on your knee, especially if you get like a big strong dude – that's going to blast through that, you can potentially blow out your knee.
Yeah.
And like, so that's one thing that we preach so much is like, you got to hug that knee. You have to protect your knee. And if you feel it failing, then move to something else, because it's not worth blowing out. And of course, like, everybody sees the neck injuries.
Sure.
Like, getting stacked up. I just recently came off of a really bad neck injury, getting stacked up and smashed. But not necessarily like, other than like the average, like everybody sees ACLs, MCLs, stuff like that, from heel hooks, knees popping, stuff like that. We've been really lucky. We have we've done a really good job of like fostering a very healthy amount of competition without trying to hurt each other. We've had like one injury, like one severe injury ever at 10th Planet. And there was a total freak accident, just like out of the blue, like it could have happened any given day, anywhere. And so we've been very, very fortunate to not have any like severe accidents or injuries for that matter. So and I think that it's also just like the mentality that we preach there and how because we're not just training partners there. It's kind of like a cool, like family, like,
right.
One of the reasons that, we had to reschedule this was, so I had family in this weekend. And then I also forgot that, we had a movie night last night.
Nice.
So yeah, we actually watched Choke, the documentary Choke.
Yep.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's cool that we do a lot of that type of stuff. And so it breeds this like era of, we're not just like there to just destroy each other. We're also there as friends, and most of us are friends outside of the gym as well. So
yeah, I can agree. I think our gym, you know, I drive probably 40, 45 minutes from my house to get to my gym, and there's like a gym, probably two or three gyms, like within a 10, 15 minute radius. And I've been driving out, you know, that far, and it's because my coaches and my training partners, and it's our family, really. I mean, it's just who we kind of disconnect from everything with. And it's just, you know, plus, you know, the coaches are awesome. You know, like my instructor Chewy is, you know, just a great him. And we got another guy, Chad Hardy, who's, you know, a younger guy, is a black belt, man. He's super tough. We have a lot of just tough people, man, people from all over. It's weird. Mm-hmm. Like the conglomerate of like lawyers we have lawyers. We have like, you know, police officers. We've got, you know, me, I'm a physical therapist. We've got just like, you know, your marketing, businessmen, HR people, just everybody, man. It's so cool. Mm. That's a good thing about jiu-jitsu. I think regardless if you're 10th Planet or if you're, you know, Gracie, whatever you are, you know, whatever style of jiu-jitsu you play, I think we all have a similar understanding of each other, like what we go through, what we put ourselves through every day.
For sure.
Which I think is part of that whole, you know, jiu-jitsu community, part of like being able to, you know, like you said, like you were talking to other podcasts, you can just go, just drop in another 10th Planet gym or drop in another gym. You know, we have that all the time. People drop by, man, you just share knowledge and you share techniques and you get a different look. You know, I'm sure there's, you know, somebody 10th Planet, you know, somewhere in California is going to have a different look or a different style than, you know, you guys in Portland. I mean, it's just,
that's just the way
jiu-jitsu is, man. And it breeds creativity, which I think is awesome. You know, I think it does. It allows people to kind of play their own style, which, you know, which kind of leads us into, you know, your thing, like what you're doing with your company, your own style. And I think that's, I was like, it's different. You know what I mean? Mm. Everybody likes Vikings and shit, you know, that's nothing's, Vikings are awesome, but yeah, like, yeah. I don't know. So how did you come up with your ideas and stuff? Like, let's talk about your, you know, I want to talk about your company a little bit.
Yeah.
What made you want to start it, and kind of where does that inspiration come from?
So originally, a lot of it came from just – I saw a lot of gear out there that was cool, like cool designs. A lot of it was a lot more like Asian-inspired, which is rightfully so because you see the majority of martial arts came from Asia.
Right.
You got judo turned into Japanese jiu-jitsu, which turned into Gracie jiu-jitsu, which turned into 10th Planet jiu-jitsu. It's spawned. There's that whole lineage there. And so I see a lot of like Asian-inspired stuff, which looks cool and stuff like that. But I was just like, I don't know. It's not really my style. It's not really my thing. It's like I'd like to see something else out there. And I saw some gear out there that was like kind of like a little more like Norse or like Viking inspired and stuff like that. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, but I think I can do better. And I by no means am a graphic artist. I by no means am a graphic designer by any shape of the imagination. I'm very rudimentary. Anything I can learn on YouTube, I can probably kind of figure out and play around with that way. But I had these ideas. I kept, like, seeing gear. I'm like, what if it was with, like, runes and some, like, cool designs and, like, some cool scroll work and stuff like that. And just so, like, I had these, like, basic ideas. And I had these just some cool ideas in the back of my head. And just kind of kicking around back there. And and then some cool ideas for, like, T-shirts and stuff like that. I was like, wow, you know, it'd be really cool if I could, like, produce these. And I was just like, well, I wonder what stuff like that would cost. And then I was having a conversation with my friend Elena. We had just both recently got our purple belts. And she made a comment. She's like, well, once you become a purple belt, you can start looking for sponsorship, start, like, doing competitions, possibly for money, possibly for just, like, getting out there. And especially with social media nowadays, with Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, stuff like that, you can kind of, like, get a lot of stuff paid for. You can get free gear. You can get discounts on gear, stuff like that. Uh-huh. So we were kind of both talking about that. Then between that conversation and then me having ideas about some ideas for gear, I came to a realization. I was like, maybe we could roll this into doing our own thing, seeing what – and so then I started looking into, like, what T-shirts cost. A relative of my wife actually works as a he imports stuff from overseas and has his own company here in the States. And so I was just talking to him about, like, his connections as far as, like, import, export, stuff like that. And he kind of hooked me up with, like, a list of suppliers and just kind of just, like, putting the pieces together, finding suppliers, finding what the costs of certain things are. And then I, like, found some graphic designers and I started putting these ideas in actual designs. And then from those designs, building it out as getting samples and trying things out, failing a lot. A bunch of samples came out horrible and just it wasn't quality product. And I definitely knew that I wanted to put something together. And that was another thing. I really wanted to have something that would hold up. Like, everybody – you pay quite a bit of money. You pay anywhere from $40 to $70 for rash guard, including shipping, right?
Right.
So you're going to want that thing to hold up. You're going to want it to not start pilling out, to not, like, rip, to the seams to stay together, stuff like that.
Sure.
And so that's really important to me, and it's really important to us as a company, is that we really wanted to have the ability to have a quality product, have something that I would want to wear, and in turn also looks cool, that has cool designs to it, has a little bit of that Norse flair to it. And so we started putting things together, and now we have the company that we have is Asgard 503.
So, and 503 is the area code, right, for you guys?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're 502. Louisville's 502.
Oh, really?
It's pretty wild. I was like, that's pretty funny. What was, like, your first idea that you kind of came up with that actually, like, worked out? Was it, like, a first design that you had that kind of took off?
So our brown rash guard that we have, actually the print that – I have a closet full of misprints. But
nice. I'll take
when
one.
when we finally got I always joke that I want to, like, make a collage out of them or a blanket out of them or something. But when we finally got the print correct and it looked awesome, I was like, wow, this is awesome. This is really great. And it's actually done really well for us. Like, people really like how it looks and how it holds up. I haven't had any – and we stand behind everything that we sell. Like, if you ever have any issues with anything we sell, please contact us. Please contact us, because that's super important to me, is having that customer service for people, having that ability to be accessible via Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever media it is. And that's why, like, all of our contact info is out there. And just, like, let me know the second anything happens, and I will do whatever I can to make it right, because that's one thing I've noticed as just being a consumer is you definitely see the difference between good and bad customer service. And so that's one thing I really wanted to be was have that great customer service. I don't want to have to use that.
Right.
I want everybody to be happy with everything that we have. So, but yeah, when I saw those the brown rash guard come out, I was very, very happy with it. It turned the coloring, the everything just looked great. It was a really cool idea, and actually I have some it actually kind of morphed from one design to another, and then when we found the right designer, he put his spin on it, and that just like really made it pop. So we were really, really happy with that. And then as far as like t-shirts go, this one right here, the Jiu-Jitsu YouTube one,
that's awesome.
has been really, really popular. I actually just put in a reorder for it of t-shirts, and we actually are doing women's sizes now and women's
awesome.
Cuts of t-shirts. So because I've had so many requests like, do you guys have women's sizes? I'm like, unfortunately, we don't, because I didn't know how well the t-shirt would do. So now we're going to have women's sizes, so which I'm very, very happy about and very excited to do. So
what's like a good way? I mean, how do you see it growing? Like, what do you want it? What direction do you want it to go?
I would really, really like to be able to sponsor as many athletes as possible. And that's another reason why I got into it. Sure, I got into it to have a successful company, but at the same time, I really like that aspect of being able to sponsor people and being able to help people grow in the sport and put some money back into the sport. And if people know that what they're buying, say you buy a $22 shirt, you know that a portion of that is directly going to an athlete that you like, that, or just athletes in general, that kind of makes me feel good. Like seeing companies that actually give back to the athletes and like help them with their entry fees, support them with whatever they need. And just like when you see, and that's one thing that really I like, is seeing my logo on somebody's competition rash guard, seeing my logo on MMA fighter's banner. And that was one thing, like today, I woke up this afternoon and I immediately had to drive out to Gresham to pick up some fighter t-shirts for some walkout t-shirts for one of our fighters and drop them off to him. So it's just like doing those type of things, like seeing how like excited he saw like everything done, and it's just like it makes it a little bit easier for them. And if I can make it a little bit easier for them, that's awesome. Like how we support him, it makes his training camps, it makes his fights that much easier, it makes his overall training that much easier. Mm-hmm. And anytime we can help support and help give back to fighters, give back to jiu-jitsu athletes, give back to the community in general, I'm very happy to do that. And I'm glad that we can do that. So, and I just recently was contacted about sponsoring some grappling events.
Uh-huh.
And I would love to be able to do that. I would love to be able to do a submission only or a tournament sponsored by Asgard 503. That would be awesome. I would love to do that. Something if something came along when we're in a position to do something like that, I would definitely love to do that. And that's where I want to grow the business. That's where I want to grow and be able to do that, and to do that full time. To do for me to be able to quit my day job and do this full time would definitely be a big advantage, because then I could really put everything I have into it. So
yeah, it's a risk, man. It's definitely like what I love doing. You know, obviously I put out some content for, you know, injury prevention and stuff. I feel like I have like the small little niche in this jiu-jitsu community. You know, there's a ton of black belts. I mean, I'm a brown belt, but there's a ton of black belts out there, you know, that are world champions, have all these credentials, and, you know, obviously don't have a lot of that stuff, but like, mm-hmm. I do have, you know, a specific niche, and, you know, I kind of, for me, it started with like people just walking up at the gym and asking me about stuff. Like, hey man, what's my knees kind of tweaked? Can you look at it? Can you do this? Can you that? And I really, I never say no, really. You know, I never do. Mm-hmm. I'm always giving somebody, you know, I'm not going to be like, well, no, you set up an appointment or whatever. I just look at them and I try to help them and give them some advice. And I was like, man, I love doing this. I love helping people. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you love helping support people, support jiu-jitsu. I'm kind of in the same way. Like, I love keeping people on the mats. I love keeping people training. And I've had some bad injuries, too. And, you know, being out of injuries, it's a pain in the ass. You know, being out of injuries sucks. You know, you can't train. You're grumpy. You know, you don't get your energy out. And mm-hmm. so, like, I just enjoy doing that. But taking the whole risk, you know, the risk of, like, I'm going to spend all this time and a hell of a lot of money to pursue this thing, you know, which could fail. Mm-hmm. You know, like, for me, I have a kid and another kid on the way. And, you know, I have a wife and I have, you know, a mortgage and all that stuff. And it's like, and now all of a sudden I'm like, hey, I love being a therapist, but I also really like jiu-jitsu. Like, this jiu-jitsu thing creeped up on me, and it's, like, taking over, you know? And,
yeah.
You know, I've been at it for a while, and it's, like, I didn't expect it to be where it's at, like, be as much. It's just, like, a freaking... It reminds me of, like, Venom. You ever seen, like, the Marvel comics, Venom? It's, like, it just fucking, like, grows on you. Just grows and takes over, man. Yeah. And it's just, like, you just love it, and you love how excited people get from competing, and like they get that whole rush from jiu-jitsu. It's just like a lot of people don't understand what that means, like what it feels like. Have a hard day of training and just like leaving training and you just get in your car and you're just kind of like, that was fun. Like, that was awesome. Like, that's the shit you're going to remember, you know?
Oh yeah. It's also like, I don't know how many days, I'm sure you've had it too, where like you have like that bad day and then you're just like, I don't want to go to jiu-jitsu. I'm grumpy. I just like, I'm not in the mood. You go, you get those hard rolls, and even if you roll like crap, you still feel great after.
Yeah,
you're just like, and I remember telling that to my buddy Phil, one of our coaches. I was like, dude, this was exactly what I needed.
Yeah.
I didn't know I needed it, but I needed it, and I feel so much better. And that's one of the more interesting things is, so a lot of people train and then they go home, go to bed. I train and then I go into work. And so, it, like, guys are always like, dude, you come in here in, like, a really good mood a lot of the time, like, especially, like, on Mondays and stuff. I'm like, yeah, because Mondays are, like, our hardest days, and I just, like, blow it all out at the gym. I get everything out. And so I just – I usually, like, just come from the gym, just showered, just eaten some food, and then I show up to work, and, like, yeah, of course I'm going to be in a better mood.
Yeah, what do you – like, what do you feel like – how does somebody go about getting promoted – like, getting – you guys to sponsor them, or like, what do you all look for in an athlete?
So we don't do any, like, I've done some like, some advertising via like, promoted stuff on Facebook mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And it just, I never really, it never felt authentic. It never felt like it was worth it. I was like, well, I'm just giving this company more money. It just like, and you see that little sponsored link up on the corner. You're just like, oh yeah, they got me.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And, I even made like a post on my, personal Facebook. I was like, man, I've only trained no-gi, but like, I keep seeing these sponsored ads for, gis, and it's just like, it's all around me. It's like, maybe I should buy one. And then I had a bunch of friends just give me a rash of shit about that. So, but
about what, like not training gi or
no? Yeah. No. About, buying a gi and stuff like that.
I love the gi, man. Gi's my shit.
But,
it's awesome. But
what we look for as far as like, to sponsor an athlete, we look for somebody that has like a really strong social media presence and somebody that, because I would much rather support either financially or however we arrange, I would rather give that money or that value of money to a individual rather than a large company.
Yeah.
Because that company is already a $1 billion company. I'd rather help out the little guy. I'd rather influx that money into somebody that it's going to help exponentially. It's going to help that small, that one individual 10 times more than that amount of money that I would have spent on a sponsored ad.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody with like really good social media presence, somebody with like, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a black belt or a multi-time world champion or anything like that. It's somebody that is that is putting into combat sports as much as we want to put into combat sports. That like, so like our guy Andrew, he quit his job like two or three years ago to pursue jiu-jitsu full time. He lived at a jiu-jitsu school, literally at the LA Jiu-Jitsu club. He lived there. He supported himself by teaching privates, by, and everything, his whole world is jiu-jitsu. And so somebody like that, you see that, and you see the exponential growth. You see them traveling to HQ, you see them traveling to Van Nuys, you see them going out of their way to get as much as they can and train with as many people as they can and push themselves. Like, he went down to Peru and competed in a tournament down there. He's gone like all over the, he went to Florida and competed in a tournament out there, did really well.
Yeah.
So he's what people would spend their money on for like a vacation, he's spending his on tournament vacations.
Gotcha.
And just really getting out there. Our guy, Chris Williams, he's a local athlete, pro MMA fighter. He just had his pro debut. He actually has a fight coming up this week. But he's really out there. He's a little bit controversial. He says some silly stuff, but that's one of the reasons I like him, because he's authentic. Yeah. He doesn't try and be somebody he's not. But he's also, deep down, he's a sweetheart of a guy. He's like the nicest. Like, I just went over there and he was making some food, and he was like, "Oh, do you want some food?" I'm like, "Oh no, I gotta get." I was like, "No, dude, eat some food. This is really good." It's just like somebody, and maybe it's the Italian in me, but like somebody that's willing to like make sure you eat food. It's just like, "Oh yeah, you're a good egg. You're a good guy." So, and it's just like, I don't know. I think when it's right, when it feels right, and when it feels like, we kind of know. It's like, you know, when something's like kind of off, and like, and we've been contacted by quite a few people, and just like, I don't want to say that it's off, but it's also, we're also just a smaller company at this time, and I want to be able. I see a lot of these sponsorships of what they, quote unquote, call a sponsorship isn't necessarily a real sponsorship. I want to be able to provide somebody with an authentic sponsorship, being able to help them out as much as I can. I don't want to like half-ass it. I want it to be true blue. We have your back as much as you have ours. Mm-hmm. We want to give back to you as much as you give to us. And we want this to be like a symbiotic relationship. And we want to work with you. We want to see you grow. Like, in the short amount of time that we've been sponsoring Andrew, he's now becoming a he's now going to be the head instructor of a 10 Planet school.
Okay.
And that's awesome. And it's great. I'm so happy for him. And I want to support him as much as possible in that. And I really want to go down there. And he's actually been able to hook me up with a bunch of other people in the community. And same thing with Chris. Sunshine here in Portland. Mm-hmm. He's been able to hook me up with other fighters. We've actually been able to help out other fighters with some like smaller sponsorships and help out like in any way we can. And it may not be much because we still are a smaller company, but I want to be able to give as much as I can. So at this point, like, We can only sponsor so many.
Right.
And I want it to be an authentic sponsorship. I also, right now, I don't want to like talk shit on other companies that have like very, very questionable like sponsorships. But at the same time, it's just like, giving somebody a promo code isn't necessarily a sponsorship.
So that's what, like, so what, you don't have to say any names, but what do you see as like a, so like a promo code is like, do you think that's, I mean, well, is that how some sponsorships are?
So, from what I've seen, and if anybody listening to this and seeing me talk about this knows exactly what I'm talking about. But it's like, I've seen that, and I've heard that, and I've heard like mixed experiences. People saying that they're quote unquote sponsored when they don't necessarily have a like. So they're covering your tournament costs. They're covering your plane flight. They're covering your like you're actually getting a monthly stipend from them. What is your sponsorship?
Okay.
Oh, they gave me a promo code and I get like 40% off of anything in their store. And they gave me some stickers. I'm like, okay, if that's what you see as a sponsorship, that's great. And you're quote unquote, either a brand ambassador or what have you. If that's what you see as a sponsorship, that's awesome. And more power to you. If you can get a rash guard for $10, that's awesome. I don't blame you. I don't begrudge anybody for wanting to get a killer deal. But I also you see what like real sponsorships are, and even me saying that like it kind of just like I don't want to come across as like saying like devaluing anything that anybody gets from a company because mm-hmm. anything like it all I see the intentions are really good. I see the intentions as. I hope the intentions are really good as that all they want to do is just help the sport grow, right? Okay. That's all any of us want. We want to see more money in the sport. We want to see the sport grow. And we want to see it get better. But I really hope deep down there aren't ulterior motives. It's not just a way to get your product out there more so that you're trying to catch a bigger portion of the market, stuff like that. So it's just like when we do sponsor an athlete, I want it to be very genuine and very legitimate. And the people that I do sponsor so far right now, I know very well. Like I know Andrew and I knew him a little bit before and then I just got to know him more. Our guy Matt Paul, I have known him for a little over a year. Like before we started sponsoring him. Sunshine, he came very highly recommended from a lot of our friends. Mm-hmm. And so very, very legitimate friends that I've known for a couple of years now. And so I was just like, okay, if you're giving him the blessing, then I'm very apt to contact him and talk to him and work with him. And that's what it was. It was kind of like almost like a courting thing. Like mm-hmm. you're like when you first start dating, you kind of feeling people out, trying to see how they are, see because social media only shows so much.
Right.
So like you can only learn so much via what they post on Instagram, what they post on Facebook, stuff like that. And that was like one thing even with Chris, like he seemed a little bit abrasive on social media, but then like when I actually sat down with him and talked to him and got to hang out with him some, and I even like sparred with him a little bit, I was like, oh, this guy's really he's a nice guy. He has this persona that he has. And that's also, yeah. Like I said, that's one of the reasons that kind of drew me to him too, is this like maybe a little bit of controversy, maybe him speaking his mind is what this sport needs and what and I feel like MMA needs like some really good honesty. And so like I like seeing that in the athletes that we sponsor. I like seeing a very honest person, and even in the loss, like I'm more than happy to help somebody even in a loss, because I like say Chris loses his next fight, I'm not gonna be like, well, okay, I'm done with you, you lost the fight, whatever, go find another sponsor. No, it's like that's when they need that reassurance even more. That's like, because I've lost tournaments before. I've lost devastating tournaments that have like really crushed me. Like I lost at Gracie Nationals, and I was like it like set me back for a couple weeks. Like I was my wife was trying to be very sweet to me and everything. I'm just like, no, it's – you can say all the nice, sweet, kind things you want, but it's not really going through. But she just kept being there for me, kept supporting me. And that really helped because it was – and even just seeing that, it was just like that's the time that you need to be supporting people as much as possible. So
what about – I'm just curious. What about that law? Like, so as far as you compete, you know – pretty often, or how often do you like to compete?
So, last year, I think I competed 5 or 6 times.
Okay.
The previous year before that, I think it was like 12 or 13 times.
So what's like a devastating, I've had a devastating loss, and people get tired of hearing what mine was like at my gym, and like, I got like finished really quick. What's a devastating loss to you? I mean, was there a lot of, I guess, stuff on the line? Was it just the way you lost?
It was at Gracie Nationals. So we had flown down as a big team. It was down in L.A., not last year, but the year before. Or was it last year? I think it was the year before. And we had flown down as a team. And so there's a big group of us. It was my first time ever being in L.A. It was at, like, the L.A. Convention Center. It was a big to-do. And I think it was the nervousness of just being in such, like, a big event like that. And for some reason, like, my bracket got really weird. And so I ended up, like, having, like, two byes. And, like, I immediately got put into the – so it was, like, a – it was supposed to be a 16-man bracket, but it was only a 15-man bracket. And so I was that odd one out. So I bypassed, like, the first three rounds. And so I immediately went in without having any rolls. And I immediately went in against guys that had just beaten a bunch of other people.
Right.
So I kept warming up and cooling down and warming up and cooling down. And it was just like, well, I don't know when I'm going to roll. I don't know when I'm going to roll. And I was trying to stay warm for like – I think it was like over an hour and a half that I was trying to stay warm for it. And I was just like, am I ever going to roll? And then I got in there and it just – and even one of my training partners and one of our coaches even said, he was like, that wasn't you. That like, I don't know whether it was just like you're so far out of your element, like something. And I think I just built it up so big in my head. And I just like that this was such a big thing because I paid for a plane flight. Like we're doing this as a group. And it's just like for me, that felt like there was a lot of pressure and like a lot on the line for that.
Sure.
And I just made like a really dumb mistake. I let myself get into a position that I felt really comfortable in, and then I kind of took it for granted how comfortable I was used to being in that position, and then it turned into a submission for him. And I'm not taking anything away from him. He's a really great guy. He actually just competed in the EBI trials a couple times ago. And which is great. I'd love to see that. And there was another 10th Planet guy. And and I also like injured my knee when I did it. Yeah. Like so between getting injured and having like and losing in that fashion, like not really having your best showing, right? Like
right.
And
yeah.
Even and I'm sure you feel that way too. It was just like 100%. I knew I could have done better, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And so just like knowing that and not doing your full potential. Like if I lose, but I gave it everything and I really like put forth everything I had and I still lose, I don't consider that a loss. I consider that like, yeah, technically I lost, but I did everything I could and I had a really good showing. And then I'm going to move forward learning from my mistakes.
Sure.
So, but that was just, it was just one of those things. It was like, it wasn't me out there. It was just, it was a shitty version of me. So,
so you've only done no-gi tournaments, only no-gi stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I've only trained no-gi. I think I've put on a gi maybe once in my entire life, and that was just for a goof. So
I'm like the opposite, man. I love the gi, man. That's like what I started in, you know, was the gi. And I mean, I do no-gi, but I definitely feel like I built my game. A lot of my game is around like the gi. I don't know. Like it's such a weird to me. It's like so different. I feel like the gi is like I think everybody should do both. Like I think everybody should do gi and no gi, as I think they both complement each other in different ways. I think like you know being tight and technical, you know, and different stuff, and using grips, and there's like a lot of variety of stuff you can do in the gi. Obviously, no gi as well. I don't know, like, so there's, like, have you ever been curious about training in the gi? I mean, is there something, like, you want to get into, like, you know, as a purple belt, you gotta, I mean, like, I think you gotta, in my opinion, you gotta be able to do both.
So I've actually rolled with some guys, John Diggins, very accomplished black belt here, trains out of a Straight Blast up here. Okay. He actually, I want to say he took gold in IBJJF just recently this last year, and so I've rolled with him, and he trains gi and no gi, and I think he took gold in gi, and I think maybe silver or gold in no gi. And I've rolled with him, and he rolls both, And he's very, very good at no-gi. And I'm like, maybe there's something to that. And it's the same thing with a lot of guys that I've – that have come through and have trained gi and no-gi. And like, yeah, there's something to it. There's some cool stuff. But I also think that like there's only so many hours in the day. Like if I'm trying to maintain a level of proficiency in no-gi, then – if I start training in gi, is that going to take away from my time learning my no-gi stuff and keeping that level of proficiency up with my no-gi? But I've also in turn heard of guys talking about how they'll roll gi, but they'll still use all their no-gi grips. They'll still use their gable grips, their 10-finger grips, their just different stuff like that, and not focus so much on like their collar grips and their stuff like that. So it's – so they're still getting their no-gi work in, but also being able to be proficient in the gi. So which I would definitely see myself doing something like that. So
I think they – you know, me training them both, and I definitely feel that I favor the gi more than – no, I like no-gi. I feel like I've developed just – I started in the gi, and it's kind of where I've gotten more used to, I guess. It's just my style, whatever that is. But I think they complement each other because you have to really, you know, you can use a lot of the same grips, obviously. You know, if there's a grip in the gi, like a cross-collar grip, you can modify that to do, like, you know, behind the head or behind the neck kind of grip. You know, similar. You know, obviously there's variations in grips and positions and what you can and can't do. But there's definitely a lot of similarities. I think they both... I think from a self-defense standpoint, the gi is very applicable.
For sure.
You know, like, I mean, look at MMA as well. You know, obviously, like, I think Eddie Bravo developed, you know, rubber guard and a lot of those positions for, you know, MMA-specific stuff to close the distance and allow somebody to, you know, posture up and, you know, drop down strikes and stuff. But, you know, look at the early, you know, UFCs. Look at Hoyce Gracie use the gi. You know, I think it's definitely applicable for... you know, for both. I think, I don't know, I think it's just, I love it because I love the variety. I love the creativity you can get from both. You know, I mean, watching, you know, Gordon Ryan, how good he is in no-gi, you know, and then watching some of these guys that are just phenomenal in the gi, you know, I mean, Bernardo Faria has just got such an unreal, you know, game, Z-guard, and you know, he just plays all kinds of awesome stuff. And I just think there's such a lot of those guys, I think they complement each other, I guess is what to say.
Well, yeah, I love it. Like Meow Brothers, you look at Keenan Cornelius, you look at Andre Goval, you look at – they're all very accomplished gi athletes, but they also can transfer that over to no-gi.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
So there is something to it, and I'm like I don't judge anybody either way, and I don't like – I'm a fan. Like, I will watch gi stuff.
Sure.
I'm very, like, impressed when they do, like, crazy stuff, like when they're grabbing the bottom of the lapel and they're, like, wrapping it around
the
opponent's head. And it's just like, whoa,
fun,
that's so cool.
It's fun.
And I like, gi or no gi, like, I appreciate it either way because it's still jiu-jitsu. It's still ground fighting. It's still – and just like I appreciate sambo. I appreciate wrestling. I appreciate any – I appreciate catch wrestling. I like you see with like Josh Barnett. Like he's technically a catch wrestler.
Yeah.
And so – but he submitted Dean Lister. I mean, come on. One of the most accomplished grapplers of our era, and he submitted him with a catch wrestling – compression. So, I mean, it's like no matter what it is, it's this awesome sport of grappling.
It is like was it Ben Rothwell, the guy? I'm like the go-go choke or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Got Josh Barnett, dude. He's just an absolute stud. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane watching some of this stuff.
It's so great seeing like super high-level stuff like that. And even like when you see like guys like Damian Maya doing a super high level jiu-jitsu in an MMA setting.
It's so awesome. Great. I mean, watching Damian Maya or watching, you know, Jacare or it's nuts. I think somebody that's got really unreal jiu-jitsu is Mighty Mouse, man. For me, he is like one of the absolute. Yeah. He's one of the absolute, just like the most well-rounded athletes. Like just everything, he can do everything. Mm-hmm. It's insane.
Yeah, and it, which really sucks because I wish he got more. Like I wish he was a bigger guy because if he was in the 170, if he was in the 170 division. He would be as big as GSP because of and had the run that he's had in the 170 division.
He's more exciting.
For sure. But I think he just doesn't get the accolades that he gets because he is a smaller dude. Because like the average person, so I always judge it off of like what my wife knows. If somebody is a well-known fighter and not, and so there was this big thing about who was it? It was the GSP Michael Bisping fight.
Yeah.
And there was a talk about, like, there's a reason that he doesn't necessarily want to fight Yoel. Whatever reason it is. But it was the draw because I was like, I asked my wife, I was like, so do you know who Yoel Romero is? She's like, no, I have no idea. I was like, do you know who GSP is? She's like, oh, yeah, I love that guy. He's great. We used to watch him when he fought, and then he retired, and it sucked, and it was all sad. And, like, and you know who Michael Bisping is? Like, yeah, I've heard that name before.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's a reason for that. There's a reason that Bisping wants a GSP fight is because
more money. It's easier fight.
Exactly. And especially now that they negotiate points on the back end of pay-per-view buys, a GSP fight is going to bring in 10 times the amount of buys as a Yoel Romero fight.
Yeah.
And I don't blame Michael Bisping for that at all because he maybe has 2-3 more fights in him, possibly. I don't even know how long his contract is. But like, and it's the same thing like, people talk about, like, even in jiu-jitsu, certain athletes possibly ducking each other or just, like, I don't know if it's really gotten to that point yet where if jiu-jitsu is big enough to, like, be ducking somebody at, like, I don't know how much these guys are getting paid when they do these events.
Right.
Like, when you're putting up, like, I know that it's kind of one thing that I appreciate from Gordon Ryan is that he posts, he's like, hey, we'll do this fight. I got a guy willing to put $25,000 on this fight right now. Let's do this. And it's just like, wow, he just let the cat out of the bag how much somebody's getting paid. I'm like, but that's cool that somebody's willing to put up that much money. I appreciate what he's done, what the Donaher guys have done as far as putting all this money into this sport. Guys didn't used to get paid. Like you go 5 years ago, 6 years ago, guys weren't getting paid $20,000, $30,000 to do a jiu-jitsu tournament, a one-day tournament, or one match, like one super fight. Now guys are making cash. Even the lower-level guys are making cash.
Yeah.
And, like, people are putting money up for this. Like, our guy Andrew, he's actually putting together this submission grappling league, and he's paying his fighters, his jiu-jitsu athletes. The people that compete will win cash.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing. Like, I've done, I don't know how many tournaments, like, you figure $60, $70 a pop at a tournament.
Yeah, for sure.
You do 5 tournaments a year, that's a couple $100.
Sure.
To win what? A little tin medal and kind of bragging rights, I guess? And just like, you're testing yourself, But at the same time, it's just like, or you do a Naga, that's $120, $130 easy.
Yeah.
And sure, you have the chance to win a belt. But at the same time, like, yeah, you won Naga and you just spent $150. You see the amount of people that go to Nagas, and you see they're making pretty good money doing these events. And what are the athletes getting out of it? They're getting bragging rights. They're getting I won Naga. I'm a Naga absolute champion. I'm this. They can put these as accolades. But at the same time, like, there's kind of have to be a little something to it. Like, and that's one thing that I really appreciate about what Andrew's doing is actually paying winners. And that's like, wow, even a smaller guy can pay the winners. Why aren't these bigger companies paying their winners? Like,
how do you see that correlating for you though? Like, how do you see that correlating for like your business? Do you see like, I mean, as far as the growth of these tournaments, do you feel like that's something you kind of can almost like, not so like piggyback on, but almost like ride that wave a little bit with, you know, submission grappling, really, you know, all these super fights, submission underground, you know, fight to win, definitely. All that stuff.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I really appreciate that these tournaments are happening. And I think that, especially with, like, EBI, and I think – and I'm glad that there's so many different rule sets, too. Like, everybody talks about rule sets. I'm glad that, like, some people love points tournament. That's great. Sure. Do your points tournament. Some people like sub only. Some people like EBI. Some people like super fight. Some people like fight to win. It just – the more the merrier. And there's plenty of money to go around. There's plenty of athletes to go around. There's – and that's another thing I've noticed. There's – maybe it's just the world I'm in, but I feel like there's a lot of jiu-jitsu athletes out there.
Yeah.
Like more than you would think.
It's gotten pretty big, man.
Yeah. And so I definitely – I would love to – and that's one thing that like as far as like sponsoring athletes – it definitely gets our name out there. It gets our brand out there. When I see guys, like we were just at Submission Underground Grappling, and I, my buddy Kevin actually came out in this shirt, and I was like, oh, dude, that's so awesome of you to do that. He was like, you're on Flow Grappling for that. And I was like, dude, you didn't have to do that. He was like, oh, dude, anything I can do to help. And that's another thing with like people whose hearts are in the right place. Like people – who like you, like you want to help. You want to help people stay on the mats and stay healthy. I want to be able to help jiu-jitsu athletes train and give them gear, give them quality gear and be able to support them in any way, shape, or form I can. I definitely think with the advent of more of these tournaments coming up, it's the more the merrier. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's the more – and even like – now the EBI is happening like what once every 3 to 6 months now.
Yeah.
Like they have like 3 to 4 events a year, which is great. EBR used to be just one event a year, and now we have it more and more and more, and which I think is great. I think it's just so much more. And the UFC is partnered with EBI, and that's a huge thing. So it's great to see that no matter what you want to do, no matter where you want to go. There's a space for you in the jiu-jitsu world.
Sure.
Whether you want to do gi, no gi, submission only, points, whatever. It's not just, oh, there's worlds and there's local tournaments and that's it. So it's great. And I love it. I love seeing it more and more. And I love seeing people travel to go do tournaments. And I definitely think the cream will rise to the top for sure. I think overall, like, the best tournaments will stick around, and then the not-so-great tournaments kind of go away. And, and that'll happen. And it's just, like, the market will dictate. Just same thing with companies. Like, I hope if we do such a good job and we produce a product that people like, clothing, apparel that people like, we speak to somebody out there. We speak to a group of athletes out there that like our gear, then we'll stick around. And if not, then the market will dictate. And I think that will across all for any company, for any apparel company. Mm-hmm. If you put out a quality product, people are going to – it's going to take traction. It may take some time, but it'll catch hold. If you put out a subpar product and just try and get some money and get out of the business, then people will find out that really quick.
Where do you see your growth? Like, where do you see yourself going? Where do you see yourself transitioning, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line? Where do you want to see yourself? Where do you want to see grappling?
I definitely see grappling becoming – I think it's going to take more time, and I think there's always the diehard grappling fans.
Yeah.
I see more tournaments like this happening. I see more SUGs. I see more fight to wins. I see more. I think, especially now with the advent of streaming, I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I think there could be a submission channel online that you pay like $5. I think Flow is kind of working out the
there,
case.
Yeah,
they still have some issues with like I know that like they're having some issues with like some of the video feed cuts out from time to time and. People aren't, and I think as technology gets better, as technology gets cheaper, it's going to be easier and easier and easier to stream these events. And even somebody's going to come out with the next big thing of like a great platform that no latency, 4K video it looks amazing. The cameras are this big, and we can put 15 of them up, and one dude can control them all from a MacBook. And so that's all it'll take to set up these events. And then all you're having to do is – and so that money, instead of paying for big cameras and the cost of streaming and all that stuff, that money can go back in turn into the athletes. I would hope. That's where I would like to see it go.
Do you think, like if they have so many more EBIs or so many more tournaments, mm-hmm. going to kind of water down – jiu-jitsu a little bit? Like, it, like when UFC used to have like an event once a month, it was like a huge event, huge stars, you know, huge, you know, kind of the biggest names. They have like one or two title fights every time. But now if you have like all these tournaments every weekend, would that maybe, I mean, I think for me, it'll keep certain people around, like the real grappling fans, but some people that are kind of there as like a, it's like a niche thing. Ooh, that's kind of cool. And then they kind of get over it. After, so I don't know. I think it's kind of like there's a fine line there, whether too much, you know, if you kind of oversaturate, you know, that market, it's all people see, it might be too much.
But then again, you also have to think so if you compare it to like sports, right?
Sure.
You also have to think we're no longer a US based sport, or like, media isn't just US based. Sure. We're a global economy now.
Right.
What they say, like something like 3 billion, like at least half of the world has high speed internet, has a streamable internet. Mm-hmm. So that's a market of 3 billion people or more.
Yeah.
And so that's a lot of eyeballs. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of money. That's for a sure. lot of potential for that. And I've heard that same argument about saturation. I've heard that same argument about, like, but then you look at basketball. They have how many games? And there are those dyed, like, and so you, it brings back to those dyed in the wool fans. You have those fans that will go to every single for sure. game, no matter what. But then you also have the people that will only be around for the playoffs. And those are the people that will only pay for, like, the big names. And, like, I'm guilty of it too. Like, I'll pay for certain EBI events, but then other events, I just like, well, I'll catch the highlights. I'll see how it is. I'm sure somebody will post some shorter clips on Instagram and stuff like that. It's the same thing with UFC. Like I don't watch any other sports. And like I barely watch like UFC. But I come from a household that like both my brothers and my dad are all into like football, baseball, basketball. They all have their teams. They know their guys. They know what college they went to, stuff like that. And like, I'm like, God, you guys are such dorks about this stuff. And they're like, well, you are about UFC. I'm like, no, not really. I'll go see like I'll see pay-per-views for like one or two fighters that I appreciate. But most everything else I'll catch highlights for I'll catch news from. But that's also me speaking with my dollar. That's like, if you're going to have an exciting fighter, speak with your dollar.
Right.
And support – and like – so like this whole like Mayweather McGregor thing coming up, I'm like – even if it's $150, I almost want to buy that just to speak with my dollar and be like, you guys should have this happen. Like I want to see that happen, even though it's just like I'm not into boxing. I would still pay to see that, also to be like, oh yeah, I watched that pay-per-view. I saw that pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So –
I'm indifferent about that, man. I just think it's going to be – I think it's going to be – I'm not a huge boxing fan. I have followed boxing, though, a decent amount. And it's just like – it's just like James Toney coming to the UFC, you know, and fighting Randy Couture.
Yeah.
Randy did this like really basic ankle pick and just took him down. The guy – I mean, you just can't – it's one aspect of fighting. Mm-hmm. And it's a very specific rule set in one aspect of fighting, in which Floyd Mayweather is, as much as the guy is kind of annoying and kind of douchey, he is an extremely talented boxer. And like,
oh, yeah.
You're going to put Conor McGregor out there, who got outboxed by Nate Diaz.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's money. All it is money. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, I do want to see it, but I kind of know how it's going to end. It's going to be Floyd, you know, hitting him a couple times, backing out, bobbing, you know, doing his thing. Yeah. It's going to be a 12-round decision.
But if you watch it, you're going to be able to be like, oh, yeah, you're going to remember that fight.
Right.
Just like I remember the Katsingano Ronda Rousey fight.
Yeah.
Like, I remember watching that fight. I remember watching the Nick Diaz GSP fight.
Yep.
I remember that fight because I paid money to watch that. So I had, like, a vested interest in that. I'm just like, oh, I'm getting everything out of this fight I can. And I'm just like, oh, I very vividly remember these things.
Yeah.
And so I think that's also, like, when you almost kind of have a little bit of skin in the game when you pay for something like that. Like, I want to see that. I would love to see that. I would love to see –
it'd be fun.
I would love to see grappling get to something like that. And I think it's kind of getting that way with all these super fights with – and take it or leave it, but I definitely feel like the Donaher guys are a little bit kind of mad scientists as far as it comes to, like, social media because one guy posts one thing – and it becomes a gigantic shitstorm.
Well, yeah, and he wears a crown. You know, Gordon Ryan wears a crown, or, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They all got their thing. Like, you know, Gary Tonin's got his weird facial hair, his mustache, or whatever he does.
Yeah.
But the thing is, man, like, he'll take any fight, and I love that. Like, a lot of those guys, they're very, very talented, you know. I mean, Gary Tonin went against, like, Paul Harris, you know.
Yeah.
He was, like, twice his size.
I remember watching that fight. It was awesome.
It was
crazy. It was amazing.
And just the skill level was... Don't get me wrong. Like, I will take all the grappling. Like, I sit there, what I do in my spare time, watch YouTube videos of jiu-jitsu matches that have already happened, you know. Like, I'm just saying, for, like, the casual fan of grappling or whatever, which I don't even know if there really is, you know, there's really, you know, if you're, like, a typical MMA fan, in my opinion, they just want a knockout. Like, they don't get that excited when they go to the ground and there's a lot of ground fighting, and that's what I enjoy.
I mean, I get excited too.
The knockouts are great. It's always fun. And for me personally, like, I will watch every single grappling event, like, every day. Like, you're talking about a grappling channel? That's my shit. I would watch that. I would be like, yeah, all right, let's do that.
It would be great if, like, there was a source, because there have been so many times I've heard people talking about, like, different grappling matches. I'm like, well, I want to see that. And I go to YouTube, and it's not there. I'm like, ah. Right. And so then I have to go to, like, some weird, like, Russian website, and I'm just like, ooh, do I want to click on this link or not? And
might be, like, porn.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, or I may, like, end up
playing. It's a win-win.
Yeah, they may end up, like, hacking my computer or something.
Yeah,
but, like,
yeah.
I want to be able to – I really wish there was, like, a source that you could, like, see whatever match you want. And even if it, like, costs money, like – and I think a lot of these companies are leaving a lot of money on the table as far as – but, like, they need to take a page out of the book of, like, these, like, apps – these game apps, these on your phone – They give away a game for free, but they charge you microtransactions.
Yeah.
And people are very willing to pay. Like, if I had a free service, say Flow Grappling had a free service, right? And – wow, this is just coming off the top of my head.
Had a free upselling service.
Yeah, yeah. And they charge 50 cents for – or a dollar – for, and they gave you, like, a bunch of free content, a bunch of, like, they'll keep videos up, like, of grappling tournaments. They'll either be, they'll cost, like, $5 for, like, the first month after it is. And then after that, it goes down to a dollar. And then after that, you can, like, three for, like, $1.50 and stuff like that. And, like, but then still have, like, a bunch of, like, much older stuff that is, like, free. And because, you know, hosting and all that stuff costs money.
Sure.
But at the same time, giving away some free stuff and some good quality content, and having just, like, a Rolodex of, like, you could just type in Dean Lister and a list of all of his matches come up that are recorded. And you're just like, oh, I hadn't seen this one. Oh, who's this guy? And then you can kind of go down a wormhole of – because that happens to everybody that gets on YouTube, right? You look up Keenan Cornelius and you see 15 videos, and then you see, oh, when did he fight this guy? Oh, he competed against this guy. Oh, who's that guy? Oh, I'd never heard about that guy. And then you discover somebody else, and it just kind of bobs and weaves, and then you're watching cat videos. But at the same time, like, if you could just have a source of just grappling, it's just – and I think Fight Pass – kind of does that.
Right.
And I think they're wanting to do that. But I still think for me, I'm not going to pay for Fight Pass. For me, it's not worth it at this time to pay for Fight Pass. It's because I don't watch enough MMA. Yeah. I want to see like pure grappling. I want to see, and until Flo can like really put something together in a better package with not having to worry. And I think they're doing, I think as far, they're still a fairly young company. It's very similar to like Budo Fights or like any of these like smaller entities. I think Flo is doing a really good job of like kind of building their brand. And
sure.
They have a ton of great content. They put out great articles. I repost them on Asgard all the time. I follow them on Instagram. They have cool like little snippets and stuff like that, like little Instagram videos. And I love that about Flo. That's one of the reasons I follow them, is because they're putting out a ton of great content.
Yeah.
And I definitely see the more eyes that they get on that. And I've even had friends that, like, I posted stuff on my personal page on Facebook, and they're like, that was a crazy video. Like, what was that? And, like, I kind of explain them. It's just like, so somebody totally out of the market seeing submission grappling and just like, whoa, that was crazy. Or, like, different people that have kind of, like, got little snippets from social media. And who was that girl? Oh, I forget her name. I think her last name started with a B. But like, she submitted, like, she was wrestling around. She was using jiu-jitsu. It was this like 15-year-old girl or 14-year-old girl rolling around with these boys and like submitting them like nothing.
Really?
like they're pieces of paper. And then she ended up like kind of getting some traction with that, and like her video had like more than 1 million views in like less than a month. So it's cool seeing that. And that's another cool thing about social media, is like you have, or like 10 Planet guy, Marvin Castillo, he had that wicked Imanari role, and that thing got reposted.
Yes.
I want to say 12 million views, just his Imanari role into submission. And look at what that guy can do now. And he's a very accomplished grappler. He's a HQ brown belt. He teaches seminars. I see him being able to like travel around the world even teaching these seminars, which is great. And that just means more money into the sport. And overall, I think that's what I want to see. That's where I see submission grappling. I want to see more money go into the sport.
Yeah.
I want to see more people being able to make money off of the sport too, like you, like what you're doing. I want to see podcast. I want to hear more podcasts about jiu-jitsu. I want to hear different people's take. I want to see content from you about, and reposting. I want to see people reposting your stuff about like, oh, I have a tight hip flexor from doing a lot of really tight closed guard stuff. How do I open that up? What are some stuff that can keep me on the mat? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
I want to see content, because now that we have cell phones and iPads and everything like that, we're constantly being inundated with content, and I want it to be quality content.
Right.
I want it to be accessible.
Yep.
And whatever it has to do with grappling, I want it to be out there. And I think as the sport grows, and as social media grows, and as we kind of figure out this weird, crazy thing that is social media, I want to see that get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
And in turn, I want to be able to help support people with my company. And so across all platforms, you asked like where I would see submission grappling going, where I see the sport going. I see it becoming bigger. I see it becoming a bigger influx of money. I see it becoming just something so much better than it is, and just growing better and better and bigger and bigger. Especially as like all these kids, you see kids nowadays that are 10, 12, and they're hitting flying arm bars. They're doing crazy submissions. Wait until those people, or even like Nicky Ryan.
Yeah, he's
the kid's
unreal.
15, and he got second place in Worlds, I believe it was. So it's just like, what's going on here,
it's
dude?
It's nuts.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
The
it's
level,
awesome.
Like,
I love that.
The growth, like the exponential growth of jiu-jitsu,
yes.
Like the level of jiu-jitsu, you know, is just like, you know, like you said, with social media and with YouTube and all this stuff has been like, it's just exponential every year. There's new techniques and kids that are younger and better and like doing stuff. I mean, I didn't do shit like that when I was like a white belt. I was like, well, I was playing closed guard and, you know, throwing up rudimentary triangles and stuff, you know, and like I wasn't doing all kinds of barambolos and all kinds of crazy shit like that. You know, it's just, it's cool, man. It's just cool. The evolution, whichever way it goes, you know, the more the better, in my opinion. You know, I like to play devil's advocate and just like get people's opinions on stuff. But for me, the more grappling events there are, the better. The more people get into it, the better. I mean, the better the competition, the better the skill level, the better the athletes are going to get. You know, you get more athletes because more people are going to say, well, instead of playing baseball, I want to jiu-jitsu. I want to do this, you know. And you're going to get guys that, you know, are going to want to go that route. And I think it's cool. I think it's cool to, you know, like for me, I want my kids to do jiu-jitsu. Even if they don't like it, I want them at least to be able to do it because I feel like it's so important for them to learn to do as like, you know, I think it's just important to know how to do some of these things. I feel like it's like a basic thing. Like, to me, it's a basic thing, like knowing how to, you know, use a spoon or, you know, make food, or it's like, that's like, you got to know how to defend yourself and survive, you know, really.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. You know, with like, as crazy as, you know, bullying is now and stuff like that, you know, which is insane. I don't think it was that prevalent. But it's different types of bullying too now. You know, it's like, oh, we're gonna throw this kid in a fight.
But you also see it more now because kids are posting videos on social media.
It's
we didn't have that when we were growing.
It's
up.
Crazy.
It was just like, but at the same time, like, I love that you're. I think it's our generation, yours and mine. I think it's the younger generations that doesn't have this famine mentality that the older generations did. That like, oh, I'm the only one company out there. I don't pretend that there's a dozen more companies that do very similar stuff that I do. I'm just like, no, there's plenty of market share out there for everybody.
Yeah.
Like I'm totally okay with the other companies that do similar things. And that's great. That like, that just makes me, it's the same thing with jiu-jitsu. Like if somebody beats me, I don't feel like, there isn't a famine mentality in jiu-jitsu. I think jiu-jitsu breeds that. It's like, oh, I screwed up. That's just going to make me work harder.
Sure.
And like you see that with anybody that like loses a match or loses a tournament, like you see them come back in the gym and they're like, oh, they're taking that out on everybody. They're going to be training twice as hard. They're going to be working their strength and conditioning. They're going to be doing all the things that they think contributed to that loss. And it just makes them hungrier and hungrier and hungrier. And I think the same thing goes for like, for me, like as far as our company, anytime I've come out with something and it didn't do well, I'm just like, oh, okay, I'm going to learn from that mistake and move forward. It's like, what is it? No losses, only lessons. And so, and that can be taken into anything you do. It's like, it can be taken to your work. It can be taken to your relationship. Like, and that's what's so great about jiu-jitsu as well. It's like, my whole life is like kind of revolved around my jiu-jitsu. And I always tell my wife, I'm like, okay, it goes you, then jiu-jitsu is a very close second, and then everything else behind that. So it's just like you can see the passion in somebody, especially like you. You can see that nobody's paying you to do this. You're doing this because you love jiu-jitsu, because you love the sport of grappling.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's the best thing ever. It's the best thing I've ever done.
I know, right?
And it's just fun.
Yeah, and I came into jiu-jitsu later in life. I was 26 when I started.
Yeah.
And so, and I'm 32 now. So it's like, they always say, like, it's like those memes. When's the best time to start jiu-jitsu? When you're 5 and now.
Yep.
So it's just like, and that was like my, and that's whenever people ask me about jiu-jitsu, I'm like, do it. Just do it. And like nothing's stopping you. You're the only one stopping you. So, it's great to see that in the community. And that's one of the reasons that like, I definitely value my jiu-jitsu friends a lot and my strength and conditioning friends a lot, because everybody's striving for this goal and everybody's striving to help each other out and to grow as a group.
Right.
And I think as long as submission grappling keeps that mentality, if that good part of jiu-jitsu sticks around, I definitely think jiu-jitsu as a whole will be a great – it'll definitely grow. It'll – as long as we don't get in our own way type thing.
Right.
As long as we don't start that famine mentality, if we don't start talking smack on each other in a non-playful way, if we don't like what Gary does and Gordon does – they kind of toe that line a little bit.
Right.
But at the same time, they're kind of playing the heels as far as like old school wrestling. They're the heel. And then you have these good guys that like, but it's, there's gotta be a little bit of an ego with it. There's gotta, like, you kind of have to have that mindset. It's like the same thing with like Connor. Like, he has to have that win mindset. Like, I'm the best there is.
Right.
To like get in a cage to compete in front of hundreds, if not thousands of people, you kind of have to be a little bit kooky. You kind of have to, like, I've yet to meet a submission grappler that wasn't a little bit off in some way.
Yeah.
But it's fine. That's totally cool. Like, I embrace that. I love that. I love that about submission grapplers, that we're all a little bit weird. But but we have this one common thing that we all love. So.
Right. I hear you, man. Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I appreciate what you do, man. I think it's awesome. I think it's great that, you know, it's hard to say, like, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to, you know, because there's more often than not that the high rate of failure is, you know, more prevalent than the rate of success, you know, so more people. So it's hard to think about what other people are going to think about your product or what you put out, you know, or about your opinions. And so that's kind of, you almost have to like be really, you got to go with the flow of stuff, you know. It's hard. It's hard because everybody's got an opinion, you know, especially with social media the way it is.
Yep.
Every asshole with a keyboard has got something to say, and they will, you know, because they don't care. The repercussions aren't as bad. But when you're out there, you know, that's the thing I respect about, like, for example, you and your company is you all putting yourself out there, and you're trying to help people and trying to grow jiu-jitsu. And, you know, that's the most important thing. And I think sometimes that's what sets people apart is their intentions as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe for your company, it seems like, you know, your intentions are to grow the sport and to grow, you know, help people, you know, grow and develop and, you know, make careers out of their passions and stuff. And, you know, I think that's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty special, man. So, where can, I know you probably got to run, man. Where can people get a hold of you and what,
across all social media, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, Asgard 503, simple Google search will come right up, our website. And there's links on our website, to everything. We're Asgard 503 on Instagram, Asgard Apparel on Twitter. If you message us, we'll definitely message you back if you have any questions about anything. Stay tuned. We actually are coming out with our shorts line, our fight shorts here very soon, hopefully within the next month or so.
That's awesome. Can't wait for that.
We should have our shorts in, and I'm very, very excited about this. This has been a kind of a work in progress, but I finally got things nailed down. I got things set up just right, and we were kind of hung up on Velcro for a little bit, but I found really, really heavy duty quality Velcro that's going to hold up. And that was a big thing for me. So I learned way more about Velcro than I ever want to know, but it's because I wanted to. And so it was okay. So we have those products dropping really soon. We have some great new t-shirts coming very soon.
I like that jiu-jitsu one, man. That one's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
The YouTube one.
Like I said, we ordered a restock of them. So if we're out of your size on our website, please forgive us. We're restocking them. We have a bunch more t-shirts coming out. We have some rash guards coming, hopefully very soon. We're finalizing some prints and some coloring issues with those. And we want to get them just right. And I'm kind of OCD when it comes to that type of stuff, but, please just bear with us. Rome wasn't built in a day, and so just give me some time, and I promise you we'll have some killer gear out there very, very soon, and everything. So just like us on Facebook, like us on Instagram, and feel free to say hi to us and message us. I try to stay really engaged with everybody, but across all social media platforms.
That's awesome. I like to appreciate it, man.
It's
good. It's been a pleasure. I think we'll have to do it again. I want to see where both of us end up here in the next couple months, and hopefully we'll see how all your... Are you planning on competing anytime coming up? Got any tournaments
on the horizon? There's another Gracie tournament down in LA.
Yeah.
I want to go to. I haven't decided whether I'm not competing. I feel like I want to. There's another local tournament coming up soon. Which I definitely want to do. I was out of town for the last one, so I definitely want to get in there and get back in there and do my thing. So,
awesome.
And, awesome, Gene. Thank you so much for letting me come on and talk a little
bit.
It's
fun. We'll do it again for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. I appreciate it, brother. Have fun at training.
Yep.
All right, man.
See you later, man.
See ya. Thank you to my guest, Mike from Asgard 503, for joining me on the podcast. Also, thank you guys for tuning in, and make sure to check out other podcasts on jujitsutherapist.com. Make sure like the podcast, leave me some reviews, and I appreciate all the feedback. If there's anybody you all are curious to hearing me talk to or interview, please let me know. I'd be more than happy to discuss and learn from all kinds of different people. And thank you guys for the support. I appreciate it. Make sure to subscribe on YouTube and, enjoy the videos. And if there's anything you guys want to see on the injury prevention videos or stretching exercises, send me a message on there. Again, thank you guys. And I'll see you next time for another podcast.